afternoon session is Jonathan Oppenheimer. I couldn't
different
see the last part.
Responsible for different activities.
So Oppenheim of the University College of London will talk about, do black holes create polyamory?
Thanks. I guess I just want to say before starting that I was woken up this morning about five by another former postdoc of Jacob with the news that he'd passed away, and I just wanted to add to what Rob said that it's just been a very sad day, and I've spent part of it reading some of his emails. And in addition to being the founder of Black Hole Thermodynamics and being a brilliant physicist, he was also a very kind gentleman and was very generous with his time. When we submitted this paper, Do Black Holes Create Polyamory, I guess a month or two ago, I was a bit ashamed, in part because I'd been working with Jacob to try and put together a paper based on some work we'd done while he was doing his sabbatical at UCL. And we were not making, we were going backwards, in fact, and not making much progress and going in circles. And at one point he wrote, just one of his emails, I don't care to enter, I should say that this paper on polyamory and black holes is a fair bit about something called the black hole final state, where it's a proposal due to Horowitz and Moldesena, where you put a final condition on the singularity. And Jacob wrote, not necessarily in relation to this particular proposal, but just in general, he wrote, I don't care to enter into speculations about what happens at the singularity. There is already lots of speculation published about the information problem, and it just confuses the issue. Have you any more thoughts, he said. He had more time for less speculative ideas. The final email I ever got from him just said, was just one line. It said, I'm thinking about this idea. And I guess I'll never know what he was thinking about it. So I'm going to present some joint work by Andrei Grudka and collaborators. I will also mention perhaps, maybe mention a few factoids about some joint work with Bill Unruh. Like the present work, it's also about the AMPS experiment, which is, you might know, is the firewall problem. Throughout this talk, I'm going to be taking the position that, or at least just imagining that black hole evaporation is unitary and information is not destroyed in a black hole. My personal prejudice is probably the other way, in that I think information is probably destroyed, and so I should just mention that I've with Benny Resnick, who's here, have done some work on exploring that issue. But I will, for the remainder of this talk, assume that black hole evaporation is unitary. Can I just ask before I start, just so I have a rough idea of the audience, how many people know about the AMPS and know what the AMPS and firewall problem is? Oh, good. Okay. And so you know monogamy of entanglement. Yes, everyone. Okay. And how about the Horowitz-Moldesena proposal? Okay, maybe less than half. All right, so I'll try and move a bit faster, which may mean we're done early. So I guess there's one of the main points that I wanted to make today is that, well, there's two. There's the original black hole information problem, version one, due to Hawking. And of course, you all seem to all know that there's the I guess the sharper version due to AMPS, which I'll call black hole information problem version two, and it's largely based on ideas from quantum information theory. And what I want to argue in this talk is that actually we can choose whether we want version one or version two of the problem. And version one, I'll argue, is actually less severe. And given that we can choose whether we want version one or version two, we might want to be choosing version one, in which case a lot of these insights from quantum information theory might not be so relevant at all. I'll also talk about the relationship between entanglement in space and entanglement in time, or polyamory in time. And I'll be studying this kind of issue between version one or version two, or I guess entanglement in time versus entanglement in space. I'll be discussing it in large part in relation to the black hole final state model or final state proposal due to Horowitz and Maldacena. I should say that there's been some interesting work done to help kind of elucidate the proposal in light of AMPS due to Lloyd and Preskill. And we're perhaps adding to that speculation. So version one, you just have a pure state form a black hole. It goes to a mixed state. And the problem is that if you don't want it to go to a mixed state, if you want to keep purity, then you have to do something drastic. For example, violate the semi-classical causal structure. Version two of the black hole information problem just involves either violating the no-cloning theorem or violating the fact that entanglement is monogamous. And as you, almost all of you know, in entanglement, if Alice and Bob are entangled, then any environment cannot be entangled with Alice and Bob. And that's due to a rather curious feature of quantum theory. I think it's one of the deeper aspects of quantum theory, which is that in quantum mechanics, you can't have correlation. In quantum mechanics, you can have correlations and purity, and in classical mechanics, you cannot have correlations and purity. In classical mechanics, if you have two people who are correlated or two systems which are correlated, then there won't be any pure state. So kind of version 1.5 of the black hole information problem is just this insight due to Preskill that if black hole evaporation is unitary, then I can find these nice slices where I appear to have a pure state which evolves into two copies of that pure state. And there's a flat space version of that, which is just if I have a quantum state with Alice, and then at some point, Bob gets a copy of it, and Bob is outside the light cone of Alice, then there appears to be cloning, because I can find, if they're space-like separated, if Alice and Bob are space-like separated, I can find a set of space-like hypersurfaces, nice slices in the case of a black hole, where a single pure state evolves into two copies. And I'm going to kind of question this standard story to some extent. And you probably know that one way out of this cloning argument is the notion of black hole complementarity. We just say that, sure, there are these two clones, but Alice and Bob can never meet in the case of a black hole, and therefore this cloning is not somehow physical. The AMPS experiment kind of evades that out due to black hole complementarity. And so, as you know, I have a pure state, say, inside the black hole. It evolves past its page time, and it evaporates past its page time. And after the page time, each subsequent photon has to purify the early time radiation. I should just say that in the original AMPS experiment, there was objections made arguing that you couldn't necessarily, again, like black hole complementarity, you couldn't do an experiment which would verify this entanglement due to computational complexity issues, so the Harlow-Hayden obstruction. However, you can form a black hole which is already entangled, and in such a case, there's no issue of computational complexity. Okay. So just to say it one more time. After the page time, each photon which is emitted, you have the picture of an infalling, an outgoing Hawking radiation, its infalling partner, and these have to be maximally entangled if the horizon is regular. On the other hand, if we're after the page time, or if we've created a maximally entangled black hole, then each photon which is emitted has to be also entangled with the early radiation or a quantum memory. So you have this polyamorous entanglement where you have B entangled both with A and R. I'm kind of interested in which violations are stronger. So for example, cloning, if I can clone a quantum state, then I can create polyamorous entanglement because I just have an R and an H. If I can clone H into B and A, then I've created polyamorous entanglement. If I've created polyamorous entanglement, then I have tachyons. Okay, so if I have, if I violate monogamy of entanglement, then I can signal faster than light. And the way you can do that is just have two parties who violate CHSH, some Bell inequality, with the system that they're both entangled with. Yeah?
What is the theory that you can clone the previous slide that you had? I forget what it is. You clone H into A and B.
Right.
But since they're entangled with R, why is the theory that you can clone them without cloning the R?
Well, because what it means to clone is, so we can, what it means to clone, cloning is about cloning an unknown state. And you can ask, what does it mean to clone an unknown state? Well, one way of thinking about an unknown state is to take something which is maximally entangled and have R, in this case, measure. Sorry?
I mean, since it's not a product between H and R, it's just a subpart of it, why is it clear that you can take that subpart and clone just that subpart?
Because what it means to clone is that you are creating a, it needs to work for any possible input state. And the way to do, to see that something is cloned is to create half of a maximally entangled state and then have R just perform any measurement and then look at the outcome. And based on the outcome, you expect if they've successfully cloned to have the same state of B and the same state of A. If they were to make two copies of the singlets, I mean, that would then, in some sense, you could imagine R makes a different measurement on here and another measurement on there. And so they're just preparing random states, each of them. Okay. I mean, it's an important point, maybe in some sense, because usually people talk about a pure state, which then gets cloned, a particular state. And of course, that you can always make a copy of a state that you, a particular pure state. So you kind of need to think about making a clone of something which is already entangled. So in some sense, when Preskill came up with his argument about cloning, it would have made sense at that point to think that that clone was already entangled with a reference system, and then you would have immediately got to the Amps paradox. So in some sense, the Amps paradox is contained in the no cloning idea of Preskill. And so non-monogamy of entanglement implies superluminal signaling, and that's because I can violate CHSH with both entangled pairs. So imagine that if R is entangled with B and A is entangled with B, then I play, I violate a Bell inequality, I play the CHSH game, and a violation of a Bell inequality is somehow implying that you have stronger correlations than you would classically, and if you have two such strong correlations, you show you can show that you can violate no signaling condition. So now you have superluminal signaling. If you have superluminal signaling, that implies a closed time-like curve via the Tolman telephone. And if you have a if you have a closed time-like curve, you have information destruction. So non-monogamy is much stronger than information destruction, and also includes, so it includes violations of causality, and it includes information destruction. To see that it can violate information destruction, well, if we can do a controlled knot on our past, controlled on our future, then what can we do? If we're in the zero-zero state, we'll be left in the zero state. So if we're in the zero state and we do a C-knot controlled on our future, we'll be left in the zero state. If we're in the one state and we do the C-knot, we'll go to the zero state. So either way, we go to the zero state, given any mixed state. And so you can imagine starting with half an entangled state going, then A can perform a C-naught on her future, and we're left with a mixed state on R. So we've gone from a pure state to a mixed state. So again, so a violation of monogamy of entanglement implies information destruction. Okay, so now I want to maybe go back to the Preskill argument about cloning in black hole spacetimes, or even in Minkowski space, and question whether that we really have a clone in this case. So remember, Alice has a copy of the state. All we're going to claim is that at some point, Bob also gets a copy. And that seems to imply some space like hypersurfaces in which you have two copies of the state. But now you can ask, what happens if Alice and Bob perform measurements on this state? And the question arises, will their outcomes be independent or will they be correlated? Yeah?
I missed the point of this. So she didn't send it faster than light, did she?
Well, I'm not saying how Bob got it. So just imagine Bob gets a copy. Then we can ask, how did Bob get it? And it turns out, you know, how Bob gets it will depend on, inform whether we have a tensor product structure, and in other words, whether their measurement results are independent or whether they're dependent on each other.
But in your thought experiment, did he kind of in some Lorentz frame instantly get it from her?
I haven't said.
No, but to get the situation where they seem to be violating no cloning, like how did? You're saying on the green line, on the top green line, they actually have both have psi.
That's right. So that's like a nice. I'm just going. It's just kind of a version of the nice slice experiment where you just say there exists a nice slice which seems to intersect the outgoing radiation and the infalling matter, and therefore we know that at some future nice slice we have two copies of the state. At some initial one, we need one.
Are we assuming that Alice at some point cloned it, or are we?
Well, the original argument doesn't say. So I'm not. I mean, the argument somehow draws a conclusion that it must be a clone, but what I'm saying is that conclusion should depend on how Bob got the state. And in particular, it depends on whether you impose a tensor product structure between Alice and Bob, or what we're calling a temporal product structure between Alice and Bob. In other words, it may be that these two states are in a product state, but it could be that this state is just the future of this state here, in which case one expects the measurement results of Bob to be correlated with the measurement results of Alice. Is that okay? So just to revisit the no cloning argument and argue that it does depend on some additional structure which one imposes. Okay, and so we call this cloning in time versus cloning in space, or sorry, tensor product versus temporal product, and it's going to be related to something which we're calling polyamory in space or polyamory in time. Just like if Alice's results are correlated with Bob's, then this is a kind of cloning in some sense which is allowed in quantum theory. Just like if we have entanglement, which is entanglement in time, it appears to violate Abel inequality for both parties, but I'll argue that it is the kind that's allowed in quantum theory.
What do you mean by entanglement in time?
Yeah, I'll say that. So entanglement in space is just the usual Alice-Bob singlet state. And notice that I think there's actually something quite nice about quantum mechanics, which is that if we can think of this entanglement, we're interested in what happens on measurement results, right? Because we're going to argue that it can be that Alice and Bob have correlated measurements and therefore they don't have a clone or polyamorous entanglement. And so if we imagine that both Alice and Bob perform a measurement, then one way to think of it is Alice performs a measurement, say on the singlet state, and that prepares a state on Bob. So people sometimes say that Bob's state is collapsed to some state. Whatever, in the case of a singlet, whatever measurement results Alice gets, Bob will be left in the same state. And that looks identical to the following situation. We have a maximally mixed state over here, but Alice performs a measurement and then sends the state forward to Bob, and he performs a measurement. All right? So because here she's preparing the state on Bob's site with a measurement, but we can also mimic this by just imagining that Bob's state is the future of Alice's state.
She doesn't send in the result of the measurement.
No, she just performs a measurement on half of a maximally mixed state, sends it to Bob, or it appears at Bob's. I mean, I just want it to be at Bob's site and then say that this is the future state. And it'll look exactly like the case where they had entanglement and she performed a measurement which steered her Bob state to that her outcome. And in fact, if Alice performs a measurement in the CHSH basis, so say sigma X or sigma Z, and Bob performs in the rotated basis, the CHSH basis, then the results they get look exactly like a violation of a Bell inequality. So it appears as if, so this entanglement in time looks like entanglement in space. You can't tell it apart, and you also violate a Bell inequality. It looks exactly like a Bell inequality, but the explanation is somehow different.
Okay. So you invent a new Hilbert space in another time that is exactly the same as a copy of the other.
Well, I could imagine that I just give it to you. I mean, maybe it's a tachyon and it gets to you. Or I could just give it to you. I mean, I don't need to, yeah. I just could send it to you slowly if we're not worried about how long it takes to arrive at your site. If your space-like separated, if your measurement is space-like separated, then I have to imagine it's a tachyon. We'll see that it also could arrive by a final state projection as well. So there's a number of ways I could imagine it arrives at your site. But if as long as it's the causal future of your state, then it's explained by quantum theory. So it's just like saying that something is not allowed by quantum theory depends on this additional structure of whether you imagine that these are space-like separated or whether they're...
Yeah, the operator commute or not commute, that's the thing, right? Space-like separated or operators of the laboratories commute. In this case, it's not commute.
That's certainly true. I'm just saying that the statistics of their measurements look exactly the same. They can't tell it apart. You cannot tell entanglement in space from the case where I perform... Sorry?
In one case, you have only one spin, and the other have two different.
Sure.
So you are in the second situation, you are duplicating
yes.
the
That's
Hilbert
right.
space.
I'm giving it to you, or not even duplicating. I'm first, Alice is making a measurement, then you're making a measurement.
But isn't the state evolving uniformly across time t? Why is there any change in entanglement?
Sorry?
If you have a single state and it's evolving uniformly, why does anything change? Why does the entanglement change?
I'm not saying entanglement changes. I'm just saying that if they perform a CHSH measurement, say, on this entanglement, they get the same outcomes, they get the same statistics as if they were to perform the measurements in this scenario where first Alice performs a measurement, gives it to Bob, then Bob performs a measurement. You can't tell the two situations apart, at least not on a single copy measurement. I'm running out of time. We could maybe the next few slides will make it clear. So this is why we call it entanglement in time. So you can imagine, for example, this situation, I mentioned that we have half of a maximally mixed state, and you can think of it as being entangled in space with some other reference system, and Alice and Bob's measurements would be completely the same as here, right? And now I want to argue that this actually, it's the entanglement in time is what actually happens in, for example, the final state projection model of Horowitz and Moldesena. So although it appears that there's cloning, and although it appears that there's a violation of monogamy of entanglement in the final state projection model, in fact, it's not the case. It's of the kind that's allowed by quantum theory, right? So just to remind half of you and tell half of you, the proposal is the following. We have the outgoing Hawking particle and the infalling Hawking particle. And here's some information we're trying to get out of the black hole. And what we can do is we can imagine that at the singularity, we put a final condition. Namely, we imagine that the infalling partner and the matter we want to get out of the black hole has a final condition. Namely, for example, this entangled state over here. It's a very fine-tuned condition, but we can imagine it. And what it does is it acts like teleportation. This is half of a maximally entangled state. There's a measurement. You can imagine there's a measurement performed here. And it effectively teleports the state out. And because you always get a particular outcome, for example, you get the phi minus state, it always succeeds in teleporting the state outside of the black hole. And Bob does not need to do any correction. And no classical communication needs to happen between the inside of the black hole and the outside. So this is a way of having the Hawking pairs, the outgoing and the infalling, actually get out the information which is inside the black hole.
So the evolution is non-unitary insight, or is it that only certain sites are allowed to
compute? Well, it's it. So I'll maybe I'll get to that. I somehow this disappeared, but what we've done is we've used to determine whether we have a clone or whether we have entanglement. What we've done is we've applied something called the ABL rule, which is applicable to the case where you have an initial condition and some final condition. And using that, you can kind of compute what happens. And you find that there's not a clone in such a situation, but the what you thought was a clone was actually correlated and therefore is allowed by quantum theory. So here we have the black hole final state model. Here you have the singlet, which is the infalling and outgoing Hawking particles, final state condition, and the information you want teleported out. It turns out that this looks exactly like a tachyon. So no one likes tachyons, I think. Some people do. I heard there's like a tachyonic underground. And so if I look, I can another solution to the black hole information problem is just imagine there's tachyons. Or maybe a nicer way of saying it is imagine that the semi-classical causal structure just doesn't hold, and somehow information can get out. Well, the final state proposal looks exactly like that. And in a certain reference frame, there exists a reference frame in which this three-particle picture actually just looks like a single particle picture with a tachyon. So if you don't like tachyons, you might not like final states. But I think the story we can tell about the black hole final state makes a bit more sense in that we say, well, we're just imposing a condition on the singularity. And anyway, we don't know what happens at the singularity. So that seems an OK thing to do. Whereas here, we might have a bit more difficulty explaining the tachyon.
Could you suppose we discover that this proposal is right?
Right.
So could we jump into a black hole and use this effect to communicate faster than light to somebody outside?
Yeah.
By a choice we make on the way in?
Yeah. Yeah, you could. So this model needs to be very. One of the things we find is that because you have a tachyon, so once you see that it's a tachyon, you know you can have a Tolman telephone. And if you're allowed to choose the unitary that acts on the state, then you can violate causality. So you can signal into your past by jumping into the black hole. So it needs to be very fine-tuned.
About that, because the usual argument that connects faster than light communication with traveling to your past or communicating is that you can do the faster than light communication in any Lorentz frame.
Right.
But here we have a sort of, we have to do it through the catalyst of the black hole singularity, so it's not like we can manipulate that.
Right, but at some point it is like a tachyon, and you can effectively, it's actually kind of close to the horizon where it's, here's where it gets tachyonic because this infalling photon is.
Yeah, I'm not questioning that it's right. Tachyonic. I'm questioning that we have enough frames we can do in to right. Use it to communicate with our past.
Right, yeah, it seems so. So you effectively can bounce it off of a mirror and do a unitary somewhere here.
You thought this through and you're asserting that.
I once thought like you did and I was persuaded otherwise. So, yeah. So just to say, in the AMPS experiment, you have this. Well, it's actually not. So we call it polygamous entanglement because one person is entangled with two people. Here we kind of have a polyamorous entanglement because it's kind of more people are entangled in more complicated ways, and you have this. So you have an entanglement in time and two entanglements in space. It is quite complicated.
Forgetting what evolving R. Isn't the whole thing what I should be doing? Evolve whatever I have, R, A, unitarily?
Yes, in some sense, A is unitarily evolving to B.
Yeah. That's so right. Then R also unitarily evolving up in a singular fashion. Why is only A?
Yeah, R just, we don't care so much what happens to R. It's outside of the.
But this is the usual issue of trying to talk about closed systems by pretending you don't sort of talk about one piece. Right?
Sorry?
R, A is a closed system, so you just evolve everything unitarily and then nothing happens. RA was entangled, so whatever unitary evolution of RA was, its case entanglement structure is the same.
Yes, exactly. That's the point. That this thing looks exactly the same as here. the measurement statistics are the same, but it's allowed by quantum theory because, it, as you say, it's just unitary evolution of RA into BR in some sense. Okay, I've run out of time, so I just, so in conclusion, I guess there's choices we can, I guess what I'm just saying is that there are choices we can make. They're not good choices necessarily, but, so you either can choose information destruction, which I'm liable to not be too bothered about. We can also have this tensor product structure between inside and outside the black hole. If that's the case, we have polyamorous entanglement and a breakdown of the causal structure, which is really bad. However, if we have a temporal product structure between the inside and outside, it's still pretty bad, but it's less bad because we just have, so there may be a way to impose some fine tuning which will not allow you to have this kind of Tolman telephone. And just finally, two other kind of minor points. One is that the final state model, the projection model, is just a tachyonic model, but in a different reference frame. And you need to do this fine tuning of interactions if you're going to kind of, if this solution is going to be at all reasonable. And that doesn't seem great, which might lead us to either D or A. And thanks for your attention.
Do you think that all post-selection models are violate causality?
Like I said, if you impose a very strict, you know, if you impose what kinds of unitaries can happen, so we suggest, you know, for example, you might say in the straightened evolution picture, in the picture where you only have one particle rather than three, if you demand that along that line you have unitary evolution, then that's okay and you won't have a violation of causality. But if you're kind of allow some infalling observer to do arbitrary unitaries, then you're going to be in trouble.
But I thought that the principally Broad interpretation of final state was in terms of a single unitary with three particles.
Yeah, I think they also suggest a kind of a fine tuning, which would save it in that case.
Another question? If not, let's thank the speaker today. Thank you.